You're listening to an SBS News podcast.
The meat grinder of productivity. The stuff that comes out is all the stuff that kind of dictates our quality of life.
Hi, I'm Rania Yallop.
And I'm Elfie Scott.
And welcome to Party Time, the podcast from SBS News, where we keep you up to date on everything that's happening in Australian politics.
And speaking of things that are happening in Australian politics, Rania, last night you went to a storied event, a reputable event at Australian Parliament House. What was it?
Yes, it is the annual Midwinter Ball, the night of nights for Canberra.
And for those who don't know, the Midwinter Ball it's kind of like a Temu version of the Met Gala, right?
Yeah, so it's like a charity fundraiser thing. All the MPs are there. There's no Anna Wintour equivalent, or at least not one that I've seen. There's a bit of a theme to it, but really it's about like raising money for charity and kind of like bringing the press gallery and the politicians together for something that's like off the record, you know, excuse to dress up, something a little bit more fun, a little bit more relaxed, I guess, from the usual grind of parliamentary sitting.
Yeah, right. I mean, you say it's off the record, but like things have sort of started leaking through in recent years, right? Like I think there was a thing about like Malcolm Turnbull doing an impression of Donald Trump that ended up in newspapers. Like little bits and pieces can kind of like escape into the wider world.
Yeah, look, you've put a bunch of journalists in a room. So I think there was a little bit of leaking at a time. I think everyone's a little bit more careful about what they're saying.
Is it actually fun? Like, you looked amazing, by the way. You posted a photo of yourself on Instagram with like your back tattoo. It was so sick. But like, is it actually a fun night?
It's pretty good. It's a lot. It's like very overwhelming. It's like 50 tables with 10, like 500 people are in there. It's a big night. It's also like diabolically on a Wednesday night. So like everyone is there till midnight and then you're all here 7 o'clock the next morning, like battling through just the like pure exhaustion of like being in a room with 500 people for 5 hours.
Oh, truly. Oh, although I feel like if they held it on a Friday night, that's probably asking for trouble, right?
Well, yeah, and nobody would show up. Like the politicians don't want to be in Canberra any longer than the Thursday, I don't think. So they do it on a Wednesday night so everyone can still fly out Thursday afternoon back to wherever they want to be.
Nice. Well, okay. So if Rania is appearing rougher than usual, because she went to the Midwinter Ball.
I'm trying my best. I'm not the roughest in this building today.
Okay. So since we last spoke, one of the biggest things that has happened was the economic roundtable. That was all over the news for a couple of days. And Rania has a sound effect for this, and I think she wants to play it. So lame. Amazing girl. What actually is the economic roundtable?
Well, just as King Arthur himself conceived, think a big room, a bunch of politicians, business groups, unions, policy people and lobbyists sitting around a round table united on a quest to improve economic productivity in Australia.
This is how political news should be reported.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, I know it sounds like maybe a little bit dry and boring, but it's actually really interesting, right? So like, what is productivity?
So basically it measures like how much stuff you can get out of what you put into something. The RBA has a little graphic that they use to explain it. It's like a big funnel with labor and capital or money going in. The output is like goods and services coming out, and the machine itself that's getting stuff funneled into it that's making this output stuff, that's productivity. When productivity is good, you get more stuff coming out of the productivity machine. When it's not good, you get less stuff.
Yeah, amazing. And like, yeah, it could be worth people taking a look at this diagram, the meat grinder of productivity, because it's actually quite useful for understanding. And to be clear, the stuff that comes out is all the stuff that kind of dictates our quality of life, right? So good productivity theoretically means lower prices for nice things like goods and services and higher wages for us.
Yeah, so according to the Productivity Commission, that's the big government body that like overlooks this issue, overlooks productivity, and I quote, "It takes the average Australian worker just 1 hour to produce the same amount as a worker produced in a whole day in 1901. This improved productivity has allowed incomes to rise while working hours have fallen." So, you know, it's improving wages, it's improving kind of quality of life without having to put as much work into anything.
Yeah, totally. I also looked this up earlier with you, and they give these like really funny examples of like quality of life and our access to goods and services based on the amount of work. So like they have this thing where they do, in 1901, a kilogram of rump steak would take 142 minutes of work to buy, but now it takes 38 minutes. And I like the idea of like breaking down my workday into like chunks of steak. Like I've done one chunk of steak this morning.
This podcast is one chunk of steak long.
But they've also got other ones, right, that are pretty funny.
There's some things that are quite dramatic, like getting a bike takes 98% less hours of work to afford. The last time they checked this was in 2019 than it did in 1901. The other key measurements they have are like how much it is to rent a house, buy bread, attend a football game, code unspecified, and antibiotics. The last one wasn't measured in 1901, well, because they just didn't exist.
I feel like that's an oversight. Like, if it doesn't exist when you've started measuring, maybe don't include it.
Especially when you choose six things, right? Like, they just chose six, and one is one that didn't have a data point to begin with.
Just choose, like, pants or something, you know? Like, normal. Okay, so you want an efficient productivity machine to churn as much stuff out of the money and time you put into something, right?
Basically, yeah, productivity, kind of like the economy, is expected to grow year on year. And that has still been happening, but at a much slower rate.
So how do you make productivity actually grow again?
Great sound effect. Well, that was the whole question of this big roundtable. And of course, there's differing points of view. But in the end, they came up with 10 areas, as Jim Chalmers explained, with sped this up a little bit as well.
Progress towards a single national market, which is how we improve the Federation, modernise the Federation. The second one is about simplifying trade and reforming tariffs. The third one was better regulation and how we cut the clutter when it comes to reg. The fourth one was speeding up approvals in national priority areas. The fifth one was building more homes more quickly. The sixth one was how we make artificial intelligence a national priority for Australia. Seven was attracting capital and deploying investment. Eight was building a skilled and adaptable workforce. Nine was a better tax system. And 10 was modernising government services.
It was just such a long quote. But the Economic Roundtable... Oh my God. The Roundtable really is far from the only big news since the last sitting week.
Yeah, so earlier this month, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese confirmed Australia's plan to recognise a Palestinian state in September.
Yeah, and this was huge news, obviously. There was heaps of discussion about it beforehand, but they confirmed that Australia will join the UK, France and Canada and recognise the Palestinian state at the UN General Assembly in September.
And there's a few other things that have been going on as well. I mean, the Iranian ambassador has been expelled now from Australia for allegedly orchestrating anti-Semitic attacks, including the one on the Adas synagogue. As we've mentioned, we had the roundtable as well. Mark Butler went to the National Press Club, spoke about the NDIS.
Too much to capture in a chunk of steak, obviously.
Yes, yes, you need at least two chunks of steak for that. We thought we'd get someone who can do a really broad look on a few things that, you know, have been happening and to walk us through all of this. We have Senator Jackie Lambie joining us.
Also, just in case you're wondering, that kind of like persistent ringing that you're hearing in the interview is kind of just the background music of Parliament House during sitting weeks. So yeah, we can't do much about it, but there you go.
First off, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. I'm very excited. I feel a little overwhelmed. I actually got these two young guns sitting in front of me. I'm thinking, okay, let me see if World League experience can come over the top of them. Let's see what they're going to throw at me.
Before we get started on some of the kind of heavier stuff that's happened recently and how the government's responded to Gaza, I just wanted to start. You're chairing an inquiry at the moment about the National Volunteer Incentive Scheme. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I call it the Climate Army. So the Climate Army, what I do know is I did a select committee for nearly 20 months before the last election, and we've got a volunteer problem in Australia. So obviously those older people, they're getting older and we're not filling the ranks from my age group and below. So we have a real volunteer issue. So my thing is, well, how can I get people to volunteer and what would they like in return? So my thing would be, I would hope to do that with those, that generation sort of between maybe 15, 16, 25, and just see, you know, they're going, do they want university reductions? If we were to do it, what does it look like? What does it look like in their world? I'm old. So what do they want and what do they think it looks like? So we can say, hey guys, we've just had a massive flood. You know, we've got some climate issues going on. Can you guys grab your pack? Grab your uniform, whatever you need, and your boots, and get out here and help us. And the reason I want to be able to do that, because you guys go out and help, but it's your safety that I'm worried about. So I want you to have some training before you can actually get out on the ground. So I think for me, that's the big picture of it. But I don't have the answers because I need you guys to speak to me and tell me what you want. It's for me to sit here and try and organise it so it fits for the government, so it doesn't cost us a fortune, but also, you know, what would you guys like out of it? So I've had everyone say, well, what about the gap here? Is there something we can do about that? What if we were given every second Friday off, you know, to do some training? And I'm not talking about excessive training. I'm just talking about more OH&S stuff to make sure that you're safe and make sure that you have a uniform so you can be identified when you get out there, so that's ready to go on your cupboard. So you just put your boots and your uniform on, whatever that looks like. You can pick the colours, I don't care. But, you know, just so we can identify you when you're out in the ground. So for me, I can bring them in and I need the ideas, but I need you guys feeding into me because as an adult, there's no good of me saying this is what you're going to do. That's just not on. Yeah. Okay, you're a completely generation where I was said, if you don't do that, Jackie, I'm going to put a bird up your ass, right? Your generations are not like that. So it's negotiating. So what do you want and how can we make this happen?
You mentioned a gap year there, but what are some of the other incentives that have been proposed for this scheme?
Well, this is the problem, you see, because it's only just started. Even though we've had it going since February, we had an election. So we're only just doing some sitting days on it now. We've had about 60 submissions. Because the government's been a really slack and has not thrown it out there, I'm not hearing your voices. So that's now my job, okay? So my job's now to put my foot on the accelerator and go, we've got to get this out because I can't do this without those younger generations because this is theirs. They're going to have to carry that torch. So, so I don't want to put anything across the table. What do they think it looks like? You know, how much training do we need? So I don't have those answers. Mine is to sit in the middle and try and bring all that together. So, you know, the government here goes, okay, that's a fair ask. And I'm taking your thoughts up to the government and they're hearing what your thoughts are so we can get this done. And I'll be honest with you, I haven't put anything on the table. I'm ex-army for 10 years. That's fine. But what do you guys, what does it look like for you guys? What do you think? And I need that coming in. So I would hope that when this is finished in the next 8 or 10 weeks that we will do a select committee. But I need to hear from you guys. Okay, otherwise it's never going to work because it's a partnership. And I need you guys to tell me what you need so we can find something that's halfway so we can get this thing moving.
I feel like every time there's a big disaster, this conversation comes up about the reliance on the ADF when responding to natural disasters. Would this like replace the ADF entirely in terms of responding to those?
I think what it should do is reduce the ADF in coming in. I mean, we know that there's wars going all over the world at the moment, which is another problem. We don't have a great big ADF. Just so you all guys know, we only actually have, out of the 65,000 give or take full-time members across the military, that's Army, Navy, Air Force, there's only 3,000 combat troops, okay? So we have 25% officers, God knows why, but we don't have all those combat troops out there. So by depleting them is a bit of a problem. We are going to need their equipment, there is no doubt about that. And we will need some of that specialised stuff, but I would really like those younger generations to be taking control of this and going out there and leading by a pack and just bringing them in when we need the specialists, but they're having them first on the ground and then saying, listen, Army, you're going to need to bring your helicopters in because we need you to do that. I want you guys taking control of that. Okay, that's what I want to see. So a lot less reliance on our military. Okay, I find there's nothing more hearty in life than going out when a community's absolutely been smashed. You know, whether it's through drought, whether it's through flood or whatever, and you're on the ground helping those people that are so much more less fortunate than what you are. And I think it just makes you a much better person in life.
Just on the climate side of this, I mean, it's a pretty huge acknowledgement that these kind of climate disasters are getting so much worse, right, and becoming a more frequent part of our society.
Oh, it's shocking, you know, and it's like this, the sea rising. You know, well, they can sit in there in denial and people can call it whatever they want, that's fine. But the reality is I'm living in Tasmania, I'm on an island and I'm watching the sea rise. You know, and then we've got our Pacific Islanders. That sea level is rising and they're going to need new homes in the future. You know, and they've certainly worked their butts off here. We never had any problems with Pacific Islanders here. They fit into our culture very, very well. So we need to be talking about that as well. And I'd really like your guys to be sort of going, yeah, I know we've got a climate thing happening here, but, you know, we need volunteers. And second, we need to make sure we're looking after our Pacific Islanders. It's part of our duty to do so.
On the kind of other big things that have happened since this Parliament resumed, the Economic Roundtable was here last week. What did you make of all that?
Well, I wasn't invited, so, you know, so I'm on the outside, baby. I think it's great that you can have a round table. You can have a round table if you're actually being honest with people and actually listening and going to pick up some of the stuff that they're saying. But if you've already come in with an agenda and you're just running through that to make yourself look good, that really annoys me, okay? All the ideas do not come from the people up here. They usually come from the outside. So I suggest that they start listening because we don't have the answers up here. Most of the answers come from not from general people out there or, you know, this has been their life, their experience, all that sort of stuff. So as long as the government is taking those ideas away and actually looking at them and not just running through it for the sake of running through it to make themselves look as though they're doing roundtables, then it can be quite successful. However, I have my issues with that because I don't think they use those roundtables very well. And I think they already go in there with their set agenda. You know, and I think that's really wrong. Are they listening to those experts at the round tables? Are they going to investigate some of those things and go, this might be a good idea? Or are they just running through it for 3 days and wasting taxpayers' money? So I guess in the very near future we're going to find out exactly what's been picked up from those round tables or whether or not the government went in with its own agenda to sit there and waste 3 days and make other people come in, listen to some really great ideas across those tables and never use them.
Speaking about productivity, part of that is obviously budget repair. And Mark Butler said last week that only those with permanent and significant autism will remain eligible for the NDIS, and children with mild to moderate developmental delays or autism will be moved onto a different program.
Tens and tens of thousands of young children with mild to moderate developmental delay or autism are on a scheme set up for permanent disability.
What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts on the NDIS, we know that it's blown out. The NDIS was only ever there to help most vulnerable Australians, okay? And I think that it's extremely been overgenerous. What's happening here is that those people with the worst autism, what's going to happen is if we keep feeding everybody else, that they won't get the money in the end that they need. They're only going to get 50% and that's never going to go up the 50% that they need. That will be watered down over time. They're never going to benefit out of that. And that's just silly. So we've got to give and take here a little bit. You know, like I said... It was a beautiful plan from Julia Gillard. It was a lovely idea, but it is completely blown out because we have been completely over generous to start with, and we need to rein it in. So the people up the top here that really need it, that actually really need it, that their plans and that don't get watered down, because otherwise we're not helping them at all.
Turning now to Gaza, you spoke to SBS earlier this month in the wake of the Albanese government's decision to recognise Palestinian statehood. And you had this quote in the interview where you said that there was schoolboy crap going on between Albanese and Benjamin Netanyahu. At the time, there were a lot of words being exchanged between the two leaders.
I gave Prime Minister Netanyahu a clear indication of my view and Australia's view.
But I just wonder what you meant by that and what you're pushing for in that region.
Well, I think, you know, as parliamentarians, that we're supposed to take the high ground. And when you are playing like two schoolboys in grade six, that's really embarrassing for both nations. That's what I meant about that. So, and for me, it's a distraction. I got hundreds of thousands of starving kids. I don't care where you come from. I don't care what your nationality is. That is so bloody inhumane. 10% of that aid, whether it's food, medicine or anything else, about 10% of it is getting through. They're losing 90%. That's why these kids are starving. Okay, so right now we have contractors. They're not doing their job. And I think the only way to make sure that all that aid gets through, so either Hamas is not pinching it on the way, we don't have gangs stripping those convoys as well, that we need the blue hats, which is the peacekeepers on the ground. I'm not asking them to go anywhere else. I just want them on that strip. I want them on those convoys so I can get those kids fed. So while they're all going at each other and playing schoolboy games, starving kids by their hundreds of thousands are sitting on a strip because we can't get the job done. And nobody wants to back at me and put those blue hats in there. And nobody else is giving any idea how we're going to get that food and aid in there. And that bloody breaks my heart. Have some courage, for God's sakes. And that also comes down to the United Nations. I have to say they lost their way. All right? There is no excuse for not having blue berets to make sure that those convoys, with all that aid, the 100% of it gets to where it needs to go. That'd be a lot less starvation starting tomorrow. They can go and fight all they like for the next 12 months, but that's not getting food delivered to those kids that need it. Okay? And I want it delivered because those kids will never forget why they're young and they're watching their own mates die and all that hatred that it will fester over the years. And nobody wins out of that. A little bit of kindness goes a bloody hell of a long way.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much again, Jackie, for that interview. But that is it for this week. Thank you so much for listening.
Yep, we'll be back next week, another sitting week in Canberra, with all the key moments that you need to know about.
But before then, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star review, and we will catch you on the flip side.
See you then.
Bye.